Jam 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Trevor Gordon from Epilepsy Halton Peel Hamilton. He'll be sharing details of how his organization helped a young boy living with the condition. So tell me a little bit about Jordan's story.
Well, it is a really interesting story, and it was sort of my first, earliest accomplishment so far with Epilepsy Halton Peel Hamilton with social media. I take advantage of Google alerts and hashtags and being aware of what's going on with the epilepsy world and epilepsy awareness. So I came across a couple of articles that were done on the Sosa family and the five-year-old named Jordan. So it was, he has a rare condition of epilepsy, and the Sosa family was struggling to bring, to adopt Jordan and bring him over to Canada, and more specifically Mississauga. And, through the months and whatnot, they were able to do that. So I sort of came across the family, at the second stage or the second article where the family was actually able to get to Mississauga. So right away I was contacting the reporter to see if there's a way that we could connect with the family and see if we were able to offer our services.
So what ultimately became of this effort?
Well, we had the opportunity of connecting with the family. The reporter was nice enough to connect with the Sosa family, and within a matter of weeks, the family came into our office in Mississauga and met with my colleague Jasmine, who runs our Sunny Days camp, and she was able to provide the family with hundreds of different ways that we were able to, help out the family, and the family for sure was much appreciative of that. And I know Jordan and his brother have been enjoying the Sunny Days camp so far.
Have there been any challenges in providing support to them?
Not so far. I mean, there was an initial hesitation on the family because there was a language barrier. But from our standpoint, we never saw that as being an issue because ultimately, children all like to enjoy and have fun and, enjoy each other's company. And plus the fact that Jordan was able to have his brother there as well, a family member to play with. But he's been fitting in just fine, and there hasn't been any struggles so far, that's for sure.
Now, you alluded to a camp they're attending. Can you give me a little detail on that?
Yes, so it's a Sunny Days camp is a camp that is run out of Port Credit. We also have a Sunny Days camp out of Hamilton, but basically it's a free camp. We do ask for maybe a minimum donation, but it's not expected. But ultimately, it's a camp that is to help out children and their families that have epilepsy. And so there's trained staff that are obviously comfortable and able to deal with, you know, first aid and, you know, dealing with seizures. And basically throughout the week, there's a day trip once a week, and there's different games and, you know, fun that the staff does and the children get to enjoy.
So with this latest success in terms of social media and reaching out to a family affected by epilepsy, do you think that'll play a further role as you seek to help more families?
I think so. I mean, just to give a little small background on myself, I mean, I came into this job. I'm still pretty new to the job or the role, but I do have a marketing and communications background. But I went into this job in March not knowing anything about epilepsy, to be fully honest. But I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just sort of copying and paste information. And, you know, the staff and my supervisor, my executive director, Cynthia, got me trained through information going how to deal with a seizure and how to deal with, you know, first aid and, you know, CPR, and learning as much as I can. And it's still an ongoing thing that I'm doing, is learning about epilepsy. But so that being said, I'm constantly, you know, online and looking of ways I can, you know, spread the message in a way that gets heard. So my latest project has been creating memes and did you know that 1 in 100 Canadians have epilepsy? Did you know that it's impossible to swallow your tongue during a seizure? You know, like, did you know that, you know, Prince had epilepsy? Did you know that Thomas Edison had epilepsy? Just, you know, just sort of did you knows and things that kind of really get people to, like, stop and think. And it's something that then they tend to share on their social media, which not only spreads, you know, our logo and our information, but more importantly, it spreads epilepsy awareness.
So, what are the next steps in this effort?
Well, I mean, I would say to keep expanding on, you know, our social media. Right now, I mean, we do have a Facebook account, a Twitter account, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube. So right now, we're trying to make sure that those stay steady and, you know, have the information go out on a regular basis. But I think down the road, we might get into, like, Periscope and, you know, creating video broadcasting and, you know, things like that, or even maybe down the road having some of our meetings or events, you know, broadcast on YouTube. So there's many roads we can go down, but we want to make sure that we're doing it all in the right time and, you know, at the right pace and not rush to anything, and for sure not to lose the message of, which is the most important thing, is of epilepsy awareness and helping everyone out.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need for epilepsy awareness, what would you say?
I would say that everyone, those that have epilepsy, are normal people. They are not. Epilepsy is not something that is contagious. It's something, I mean, and generally that people that have seizures are aware of, you know, of what comes with it. So to not to panic, if you were to see someone that has a seizure, to not to panic and not put something in their mouth, to remain calm and to, you know, move any dangerous items away from them. Don't try to stop them or hold them back. You know, if they do fall from the seizure, but make sure that they're on their side and sort of move things away from them versus moving them away from objects. And make sure it's timed so that if it's, you know, above 5 minutes, that's when you would call 911. Anything less than 5 minutes, it's not something you necessarily have to call 911 for. But again, the biggest thing I would say is just to remain calm and to, you know, help them as best as you can.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, thank you very much.
Of course. Language barriers, cultural barriers, coming from another place. Fact is, none of that should matter in providing support to a person with a disability. Trevor did exactly the right thing. He sought out to see if there were any stories out there of someone affected with epilepsy. And he asked the question, how can I help? How can I be a positive influence on this child and his family? What can our agency do to provide support? That's exactly what it's about, folks. Not the financial bottom line. What it comes down to is asking the question, what does it mean to really provide support for someone with a disability? Am I going to do it in the public eye, just a token gesture? Or am I going to be that someone who goes out there, searches for people, and asks, can I help? Can I do something to make your life that much better? For a child especially, one who's learning about the world, they have the potential to learn many things. They can learn that the world is a cold, isolating place. Or they can come to see it's a place for diversity, a place that embraces all ability levels, all types of skills, and where people will find a way to make things better for their fellow human beings. And I would ask, if we had the chance to make the world better for a child, why wouldn't we? What in the world is it that makes us only concerned about these issues when they affect our own backyard? Trevor wasn't thinking along those lines. He was thinking, these matters can affect anyone. These really are the places we need to reach. We're doing some great work, that's true. But the fact is, it would mean so much more if we could reach so many more people. That's the joy of social media. Being able to reach out and ask, what's being done in other places? Can we learn from this? Can we grow stronger? Maybe even work together? And I consider this a great victory for the disabled community. When anyone says, I'm going to be a voice of support, that is a victory for us all. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Come on, come on.
How much did your band make at your last show? What if I told you that you could make an additional $75 per gig? SOCAM members who perform registered original material may be eligible for payment. What is SOCAM, you ask? SOCAM is the Society of Composers, Authors, and Music Publishers of Canada, the Canadian copyright collective that administers the performing rights of more than 90,000 members. For details on how to get paid for your music and for free registration, adjust your web browser to socan.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Trevor Gordon from Epilepsy Halton Peel Hamilton. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Leslie Allen from the FASTE Network. So tell me a little bit about the FASTE Network.
The FASTE Network, it actually was created by a group of parents in the 1990s who saw a need for caregivers to get together who were caregiving to individuals who lived with FASD. And the first thing that they started to do was take a look at what type of literature was out there and realize that most of the literature was very medically slanted. And so they started to develop literature that was a lot more accessible by the layperson. And from that, we've grown, and we've now do training, and we do support services for individuals who live with FASD and their caregivers and people who work with them.
So, for those who aren't as familiar with the condition, can you tell me how it affects a person?
Yes, FASD is caused by alcohol exposure to an embryo and fetus. Basically what happens is alcohol is a teratogen, and it passes through to the fetus, and it actually causes brain damage. So when the baby is born, there are different parts of the brain that can be affected, and the four main areas is physical, cognitive, behavioral, and sensory. They can have issues in any of those areas. For the most part, a lot of people associate FASD with facial characteristics, and really that is only, facial characteristics only exist if alcohol is consumed between day 17 and day 21 of the pregnancy. If it is not consumed during that time period, there's a very strong likelihood that there's not going to be any physical, it's not going to show from a physical point of view. So we consider FASD to be what's called an invisible disability.
So with the network itself, are there any challenges you face?
Certainly. You know, it's one of the things that a lot of study has been done in the area of FASD. The best way to support someone with FASD is continued support and lifetime support. So because this is brain damage, it's never going to get better. There's no medication that can help fix it. And really the best outcomes have come with providing supports for individuals who live with FASD. And of course, supports cost money. So it's, you know, consistently trying to advocate to ensure that people have the types of supports that they need to be successful.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the network, has there been any success that stood out for you?
Absolutely. Here in the province of Saskatchewan, we have developed two different court systems, one in Regina and one in Saskatoon, that specialize in bringing people who are living with FASD and other and mental health conditions, and having sort of a specialized court system for them that looks at more bringing them, giving them community support rather than actually incarceration. Now, of course, there's definitely guidelines around what type of crimes and you know what this looks like. So it's none of the major crimes. But what we find is people with FASD, one of the things that happen is they have a lot of problems at times with memory. So if they have to have a court appearance, they might completely, totally forget about the court appearance, and then they've breached and, of course, are brought back into court. So what the courts are doing is actually finding community supports to assist individuals, and we are finding some great successes where people would have normally been a part of our judicial system, that they have actually left the judicial system and have the supports in the community that they need to be successful.
So are there any projects on the horizon for the network?
Yes, we just started in April a pilot project, and this is in conjunction with our Ministry of Social Services. And what we're doing is looking at case files where either the parents, the children, or the children and parents are living with FASD and have, for whatever reason, come in contact with the Ministry of Social Services, and that the children are, that there's the possibility that the children may be apprehended. And what we're doing is we're going into the home and providing intensive supports for both the parents and the child, and working with the professionals around that family. So it might be the school system, it could be medical professionals, it could be aides, and assisting them in education with FASD. And so far, our pilot project started in April, and we've had 11 children who would have been apprehended that are still at home, and everything's going really well.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need for awareness of FASD, what would you say?
It's so important to understand the disability. I think that once people actually understand what the disability is and learn some strategies in working with individuals with FASD, and people with FASD understand what their disability is, it can really make a huge difference in the way that the person functions, in the day-to-day tasks that people face, and in the way that we as professionals interact with those individuals.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, no problem.
I find it remarkable, folks, that Saskatchewan has taken mental health to the place of legal provisions, providing something more balanced, more fair for those affected with conditions like FASD. Truth is, when dealing with mental health, if there is a crime involved, yes, a person with a disability should be held accountable. However, missing something like a court date on the grounds that you have physically problems with your memory, that is not something that should be held against a person. They should be given the opportunity to make things right. Fact is, the justice system is all about making things better, if you think about it, for society, for the victim, but it shouldn't be over the top when it comes to those affected with mental health issues, those who could not control what happened. If it's something serious, yes, it should be taken as far as it's needed to. But in the case of minor cases, as described, having special provisions, my opinion, it's a good thing. Just gives just a more balanced playing field for a person affected. When it comes to fetal alcohol syndrome itself, I honestly question, why is this a condition? Why would someone who is pregnant play fast and loose with their child's health? Fact is, any loving parent knows that their child can grow up to be anything, to do anything. And honestly, it's reckless consuming alcohol during a pregnancy. We as a society should know better. In previous interviews, I have talked about how education is truly the key. Some people might not know. They might not know the effect that it could have. And yeah, it can be something so simple as a person is a social drinker. They think one minor incident isn't going to affect anything. But you never can tell. And the last thing you want to do is get on that slippery slope. We're talking about an unborn child, a potential little life, one that could grow up to change the world. Any life has that potential, regardless of the disability. And I'm not saying fetal alcohol syndrome takes away that potential, but it does not make things easier for that child. If a disability is preventable, that is something we should all know. We should all be as informed as possible when it comes to disabilities and what steps we can take to be safe. If a disability is treatable, that's curative, not preventative. When it comes to fetal alcohol syndrome, key truly is, just don't take the risk. Don't create a disability where it doesn't have to be. In some cases, yes, there isn't going to be the educational awareness in some places. There won't be access to proper nutrition, health care, that sort of thing. Those disabilities are the result of circumstance, not of choice. The fact is, making a choice to endanger the life of an unborn child, to me that's incomprehensible. There's nothing more sacred in this world than life. All life is a gift, whether they have a disability or not. Whether they grow up to be the next world leader, or just a quiet individual doing a job, earning a living. As long as a person lives, they can contribute to this world. But it's up to each of us to take the steps to help them reach their full potential, not to endanger these poor lives. Not to start them off in a place where they're going to have to spend time in a hospital when they should be at home, sleeping, eating, learning about the world. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, the numeral 4, at gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. I'm not saying every situation when it comes to unborn children and disabilities is preventable. Fact is, people simply do the best they can. They create whatever circumstances they think will be best based on the information they have. But it is the responsibility of new parents to take the time to learn about potential risks. And if a child does have a disability, their responsibility is to create the best quality of life possible. Find answers, find treatments, find support. It's not just the child that experiences a disability. It's the family, too. And if they feel they're facing it alone, it becomes a struggle. But if they reach out, and they find information, they find support, even learn about the condition. What was once an insurmountable mountain becomes something that can be a challenge, yes, but it's one that is possible to live with. It's one that only serves to grow character and to prove, above all things, that despite any disability, the human spirit truly is indomitable. There are people with all types of conditions, all sorts of circumstances. They were never expected to survive or to achieve anything in this world. But the fact is, with the right support, with the right hope, it truly does become mind over matter. There's always someone who's beaten the odds. The fact of the matter is, people with disabilities are among the strongest you'll ever hope to meet. For the truth is, we all have something that makes us special, makes us unique. And recognizing that just because a person might have cognitive issues or physical issues or what have you, they still have the potential to learn, grow, and create. That is the key to diversity. It's also the definition of diversity in my eyes. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.